this week, our lessons, some of our lessons are based from 2 Kings 4. And there's a story there, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I was going to try to just condense it here for a few minutes to get us started to find out where our question comes from. Elisha used to travel through Shunem often, and there was a prominent woman there who took interest in him, and she started inviting him to come and eat at her house. She started having him come and stay at her house. They even fixed a little room for him upstairs in their home and gave him a place so he could rest. But one occasion he was there, and he was thinking that he wanted to do something to repay her. And so he sent his servant, whose name was Gehazi, to the woman. We don't know her name. We call her the Shunammite woman, and ask her what they could do that would repay her. She could not think of a thing. I'm sure we've all been there. Somebody says, "What do you want? What can I do?" We always can't think of a thing. But the servant took note of the fact that she did not have any children, and her husband was an older man. So when he told this to Elisha, Elisha decided that's what he would do. He told her that the next year she would have a child. And obviously it hit a nerve with her, because the way she answered him was, "Don't lie to me." I guess it's just like if we were to say, "You're kidding me." So she obviously was quite excited, and the next year she had a son. And if we were telling a fairy tale, we'd say, and they lived happily ever after. But it didn't work out that way, because life isn't always like that, is it? When her son was older, he was out in the field with his father and some reapers. And he told his dad, my head. And I guess dad didn't realize that it was very serious, but he sent him to his mother. And he sat on his mother's lap for the morning, and at around noon, he died in her arms. Well, this woman was not easily daunted, because she took him up to the upper room where Elisha used to sleep, and she knew immediately who could help her with this situation. So she didn't even tell her husband, it doesn't sound like, the situation, and told him that she was going to need a servant and a donkey. And her husband was curious, but she just said to him, "It's okay." I guess she was saying, "Don't worry, everything's all right." She got on that donkey and told the servant, "Don't slow down. We're going as fast as we can." And as she got close to where Elisha was, which was around Mount Carmel, Elisha saw her coming. And verse 26 is the one that these lessons are being based upon. Elisha told his servant, "Please run now to meet her and say to her, 'Is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child?'" And this woman, and we know what she was going through, her answer was, "It is well." But we know that she was very frantic on the inside. But she grabbed Elisha around the ankles, around his feet. And so obviously Elisha knew immediately that something was wrong. And he actually figured it out, because she also reminded him, "I didn't even ask you to give me that son." And she said, "In fact, I told you, don't deceive me." So I'm sure Elisha knew immediately that something was tragically wrong with the boy. But then Elisha decided, "Well, I'm going to send my servant over there to take care of this." And she would have none of that. Once again, she stuck with him. She said, "I'm not leaving." And finally, he had no other choice. He went with her. But the servant ran on ahead. He went in. He put his staff on the boy's face. But he did not revive. He came back and told them. When Elisha got there, he went into the room, and he first closed the door and prayed to God. But then he stretched himself out on the boy, and we remember this, and the boy first got warm, but he didn't revive yet. And then Elisha walked around a little more, and then he came back, and the boy sneezed 7 times when he stretched himself on him again, and he was raised. So I think this woman is an example to us of some traits we need to have so we can say it is well, no matter what is going on in our lives. So I first want to talk a little bit about some of the attributes that she had. And one of the first ones is she was a content woman. She had gratitude. She was not even thinking of this hole that she kind of had in her life, because you know, back in those times, it was a great burden for people not to have a child, and especially on the woman. But she didn't even bring that up when Elisha and Gehazi were asking her, "What can we do for you?" So I think that's our first lesson here today, is that we can focus on the good things that God has blessed us with. When someone comes to us and says, "How are you?" And can we say, "It is well?" We can say that if we think of the good things that are in our lives, and we're not just focusing on those things that are frustrating to us or negative or we don't have. If we don't have a content heart, we might see that in ourselves if we look closely. If we are finding that we have envy in our hearts, do we have an inability to rejoice when others have success? That might be a sign. Do we have uncontrolled ambition? Do we have a desire to win at all costs, no matter what it takes or who gets hurt? Do we have a critical spirit? I think our culture is very critical now. We have to ask ourselves, am I a content person, or am I always complaining and being critical of others? Do I have a complaining spirit along the same line? Do I get angry easily? I think sometimes if we find that these things are in our hearts and in our actions, we need to question ourselves. This woman also had a kind and compassionate heart. Romans 5:5 says, "Now hope does not disappoint, because the love of God has been poured out in our hearts by the Holy Spirit who was given to us." And when we have the love of God, we are going to want to do the work of God. That's what the love of God does for us. And this Shunammite woman, she helped Elisha. She went out of her way to help him. And we remember the women that Jesus knew and how they went out of their way to help him. Women have always had a special place in ministering to the Lord and ministering in the work of Christ. So when this woman gave her love to God's prophet, she received a blessing for it. That's another thing that can help us to say, "It is well with me." I think a great trait of hers, she was persistent. She was persuasive. She persuaded him to eat with her. She persuaded him to stay with her. She would not go back home until he went with her. She was not going to give up. So sometimes a woman of God needs to be persistent and not give up, because there are some times when Satan is going to attempt to steal something from us. She had great faith. I imagine that's the top of the list for her to be able to say, "It is well." No matter, you know, when things in our lives are really sad or horrible, our faith is what we have to turn to. We don't know much about her or how she came to be a believer, but we know this woman was even listed in Hebrews 11 among the people of faith. Not by name. Once again, we don't even know her name. But Hebrews 11:35, when it's listing people of faith, it says women receive their dead raised to life again. So there was more than one, but she was among those women. I don't know if you've heard, I'm sure you've heard this phrase, "If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy." When I was a young woman, I heard that for the first time. I had not heard it as a child. I heard it for the first time. And I'll be honest, my first reaction was I didn't like that phrase very much because I'd always been taught one person in the family is not supposed to make everybody unhappy. And so, but I think as time has gone along, I think I see a little bit more about that phrase. In the first place, we know that the mother or the wife or the woman of the house has a lot of responsibility, we feel, to make things run smoothly. And so when things are not running smoothly, the family's not happy and the woman is not happy because she's frustrated that she's not doing what she wanted to do. And of course, sometimes we know that maybe the expectations are a little bit high because we can't always make everybody happy all the time, can we? But this Shunammite woman, when she said it is well, we want to know if we can say it is well with me. Is it well with me? As we mentioned, she had contentment, a kind, compassionate heart, persistence, faith. But another thing that I believe she had was a strong confidence and a strong self-worth. And, you know, it's a little bit hard to talk about self-worth when we talk about Christians because sometimes we think, well, we don't want to be too proud of ourselves or we don't want to be just going along with the culture of today when everybody says, oh, you got to have a good self-esteem. And one of the, you know, today's women in our world are desperately insecure. And sometimes women in the church are struggling just as much as our non-Christian counterparts. But that modern solution, the self-esteem message, it doesn't provide lasting results against female insecurity. And the reason is because the solution presented is all about self. It's self-love, self-acceptance, self-promotion. We know that's not the right thing. Christ says in Mark 8, verse 34, whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. That means literally forget oneself, lose sight of oneself and one's own interests. So that is the answer for us. But I think we also need to go back and think, why is it that I have a hard time feeling good about myself or feeling right? I think sometimes we are listening to the wrong people, the wrong things. There are subtle things that cause us to feel this way. Our culture, sometimes our family, sometimes our friends, sometimes even our own thoughts conspire to undermine our confidence. They lead us to believe sometimes that we can do everything and have everything, be practically perfect, and we're bound to have disappointment and failure. Sometimes we've grown up in families without affirmation, without encouragement, without respect. And then, as adults, we find ourselves smack dab in the middle of a culture that think you got to be a size 0 or a size 2 to be beautiful, and maybe have a Barbie doll figure. Although we know Barbie finally did bring out a few little differences, but they're not that much different, are they? I don't know if you've ever heard that term, GIGO, G-I-G-O. It's kind of a computer term, research term. What it means is garbage in, garbage out. If you feed garbage into a computer, say you're putting in bad data, if you get bad data when you're doing research, well then whatever your result is also garbage. It's no good. I used to teach a computer. You heard I'm a business technology education. I would tell my kids that. If they put in bad, if they were to type in bad things for their assignment, it was not going to come out right. I always would tell them, sometimes it's the operator error. They wanted to blame the computer, but it's not always the computer. So we have to be careful who we're listening to. when we're thinking about our own self-worth and how we feel. And then we go about it the wrong way when we try to enter into this world to be accepted. We want to have a big paycheck. We want to have a big title, a prestigious, important. We want to wear designer labels, expensive clothes, accessories. We want to have a big, beautiful house. We think that's going to make us feel better. But in our hearts, we know that's not real. Phillips' translation of Romans 12, verse 4, I think is a good lesson for us. Try to have a sane estimate of your capabilities by the light of the faith that God has given to you all. I really believe that most of us are born with our personality traits. I've seen it with my own children and other children that they just come into this world with personality traits. And I think confidence is one of those traits sometimes, that one child has a lot more confidence from the beginning than another. And it's not always how we treat them. I think sometimes as parents, we feel like, well, I didn't help very well for them. But I think sometimes some people have a little bit more of a struggle with this. But I think there are some things we can do to feel better about ourselves. First, spend time giving God heartfelt praise. Daily positive devotions, expressing gratitude every day. We've got to stop comparing ourselves to others. This is never good, because you know what we do? We know ourselves and we know our very worst traits, and we're comparing ourselves to somebody else that we don't really even know, and we're just seeing outward traits. They're always unfair when we compare. It puts the focus on the wrong person, because the only person that we can change is ourselves. They often result in resentment when we compare, and they deprive us of joy. We need to meditate on scriptures. One scripture that we have to look at is John 8, verse 23. Compare ourselves to the Lord. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. We need to consistently speak positive, faith-filled words. A positive statement propels hope toward a better future. It builds up your faith and that of others, and it promotes change. Now, here's another biggie. Learn to laugh at yourself. I know sometimes we make mistakes and we're embarrassed and we don't want anybody to know, or we know they know, or we're just like mortified. Humor is the best coping mechanism there is about it. It can improve our mood. It can definitely build our self-esteem. If we can take time and laugh about what we have messed up with. Exercise regularly. Now, that's not an easy one, but that one also it helps you feel better. It releases chemicals in your body to actually help you feel better. I think we need to look our best when we go out. I think that helps us also feel better. It never fails when you run to the store and you haven't done anything, and you always run into people that you know and wish that you looked better. So I think that's just a definite thing. And I think another one is to trust our instincts more. I don't know about you, but there have been many times in my life that I had kind of a bad feeling about something, but just kind of let it keep going on, and then later you find out there was a reason I had a bad feeling about that. That was wrong. And so I think sometimes we need to trust ourselves and don't immediately doubt ourselves when we're questioned. We always, when someone questions us or criticizes us, I think we can look and see, is there some validity in it? But if we know that there's no validity, then we need to keep going forward. We need to grieve the loss of what we never have and will never be. And then we need to trust God to give us even more than we ever thought. God's perspective on us is that we are fearfully and wonderfully made. Psalm 139, verse 14. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your words, and my soul knows it very well. We are precious to God, Isaiah 43, verse 4. Since you are precious in my sight, since you are honored and I love you, I will give other men in your place and other peoples in exchange for your life. You were cared about since your conception, Isaiah 46, verse 3. Listen to me, O house of Jacob, and all the remnant of the house of Israel, for you have been born by me from birth and have been carried from the womb. We are God's child. John 1, verse 12. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, even to those who believe in his name. We are Jesus' friend. John 15, verse 15. No longer do I call you slaves, for the slave does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard from my Father I have made known to you. We were chosen by Jesus. John 15, verse 16. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you would go and bear fruit and that your fruit would remain, so that whatever you ask of the Father in my name, he may give to you. We are loved dearly by God. John 16, verse 27. For the Father himself loves you, because you have loved me and have believed that I came forth from the Father. And finally, we are free from condemnation, Romans 8, verse 1. Therefore, there is now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. This isn't just the secret to living out the true gospel. This is also the secret to glowing with divine loveliness. Like the Shunammite woman, let's choose to be content, be kind, be persistent, have faith, have confidence, and when someone asks us, we need to be able to answer it as well.